Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the first installment of Sidelines with Nance Wernis. This is Nance Wernis of the two-time champion Kansas City Storm, and I am on WFB Talk Continues. Tonight's topic is how the structure of the leagues that formed in the early 2000s has crippled the growth of women's football. I was talking to BJ about this topic, and she kind of laughed and suggested that I make the show a little bit longer than the 30 minutes I've got allotted. She thought I should go for 60, but I don't really think it will take that long. I don't think anything I'm going to suggest here is particularly controversial, and it's not a loaded topic. I don't think there will be much disagreement. I think the reason I want to point this out is that we've come to the end of a decade, and in the Knotts decade, and as we start a new one, we should take some time to reflect on really where we are as a sport and why we are where we are and how we got there, and just learn from that. And if we don't like what we see, we should be making adjustments going forward. So the comments may seem critical at times, but they're definitely the genesis to hopefully spur discussion and spur thought, and then ultimately, of course, action to make this sport better. Just to give you a little bit of background, the comments I've got are opinions that I've derived over about 6 or 7 years that I've been involved as an owner, 7 or 8 years if you consider the time as a player also. They were based on firsthand knowledge and experience with the IWFL, with the NWFA, and with the WFA. So I don't have a lot of experience or any firsthand experience with the WPFL, which is the other major league that operated during this time. So I might refer somewhat to that league, but understand that that's information that's been shared with me, and it's not based on firsthand knowledge or experience. So that's kind of the background there. So let's go back to my assertion that the leagues themselves in the Knotts of the last decade has really crippled the growth of women's football. And one of the first things I want to point out, or my belief, is that I think that they've burdened the teams with a lot of rigor and overhead that has taken away from the team's ability, or at least capacity, to market and promote themselves. And I say that when I go back to the large operating documents and contracts and rules and so forth that they have come up with that have forced the teams to work within. You know, there's a lot of fines and rigor around the operations of the teams, and I think it causes the teams to focus on maybe some things that are nice to haves, or you know, internal operations things that don't necessarily grow the sport or the teams, or cause them to get stronger, and that's probably what, as a young sport, we should be focused on. We should be focusing on recruitment and promoting the team, more players, more teams, then more fans. And as the fan base grows, the sponsorship base will grow because you're not asking for a handout, and you're just not asking for a business that might be as a favor to a player, might participate in the sponsorship program, but you can deliver a true advertising experience or a true advertising opportunity for the sponsors, and so then they will be more inclined to participate. And that's as the fan base grows and as exposure grows. And I think that too often here in the last decade, the leagues have focused on or have caused the teams to focus on operational items that cause you to focus on those or to take away from the capacity to do some of those other growth type things. And I'm talking about, you know, the deadlines for stats reporting or tape exchanges and They just distract from the real work that needs to be done to grow the sport. And that real work that needs to be done to grow the sport should be the primary focus. And I've never seen a league yet fine a team for not spending enough on advertising or promotions or not having enough people in the stands or anything like that, enough hits on their website. It's all about internal operations, and some of that's important. Don't get me wrong, especially in regard to the handshakes that you have or the relationships that you have with the other peer teams within your division that you work with and that you play during the season. Certainly there's some expectation as far as rules of engagement and how you're going to interact. And those are important because teams depend on that. But overall, I think if you look at the stacks and stacks of paper and contracts and rules that have come out of the latest round of women's football leagues, it has a lot more to do with things that don't necessarily contribute to growing the sport, and they provide distractions at best for the teams, especially the startup teams when they're so overwhelmed and there's so much to learn and to put in place, and then to be overburdened with some of this rigor and the fines and so forth that the leagues have imposed. I think it's been distracting. I think it's been a detriment to the teams and to the leagues and to the sport. I think another thing that they've done, the whole concept of owner, the owner of a team, has probably crippled the growth, I think, somewhat, because that connotation with that causes, I think, sometimes the players to disengage and blame the owner or expect the owner to solve the problems or become the indentured servant. I've heard that term before, that the owners are the indentured servants to the players, setting all this stuff up, and they really don't get any compensation for their time and efforts, and oftentimes it's a money pit to get these teams through the season. And I think that there's a lot of other sports who haven't adopted this whole owner concept, and they're probably further along or at least as far along as we are as sports football. If you look at the models that, softball, rugby, basketball, the roller derby, those sports haven't really adopted this whole owner type concept, and I think they're further along. They're kind of lighter and more nimble, and I think they probably better serve their athletes. Because I think we need to be honest with ourselves also. I know a lot of times the leagues have adopted the term professional. We're a professional football team, a professional football league. And that in and of itself, I think, is a detriment in that it masks what we really are, and we are amateur athletes. We don't like to hear that. I know we all like to think we're professionals, and we think we're really good athletes, so maybe that's why we're professional. But in the end, we're not. We're amateur athletes, and this is a hobby, and we all go to work on Monday morning. And so we need to, be aware of that and not lose sight of the fact that really where we are, and I think that can help us plan better and posture ourselves better for the future. Now, there's nothing that says, as amateur athletes, that we can't put on a great show for our fans, that we can't travel. I know there's a couple of extensively travel. I know that there's a couple of softball teams here in Kansas City that are working their tails off right now to get money to go to Las Vegas for a big national softball tournament. Now, those athletes are probably more accomplished than we are in our sport because they've probably been playing for 10 to 15, maybe 20 years longer than, many of our players. And they're probably much more accomplished softball players just because they've had more formal training through the school systems or through collegiate careers. And they're in the same boat that we are as far as doing fundraising and trying to get to their national tournament. And we just need to make sure that you don't hear them talk, the softball teams calling themselves professionals or the rugby players professionals. And I think that we sometimes have a disservice to ourselves by not really understanding our position and where we are and behaving and advertising ourselves appropriately. So anyway, that's one thing I think that the leagues in general have done to kind of delayed the growth of the sport with their excessive rules and compliance requirements and fines and et cetera. For a new sport with a lot of times, many years, there's a lot of new teams, and we should be calling them in and helping them and spending as much time with best practices and education and so forth than we are with rules and rigor and fines, et cetera. The other thing I think that the leagues have done that has really caused the slowness of growth for the teams is the added expense that's really prohibited the growth and the investment in the teams. I mean, let's face it, if you're having to spend $30,000+ just to get a license, you know, 1-year license or a lifetime license that's revocable, you know, what's your appetite to really bite that off? I know that the NWFA wanted you to have those, you know, high upfront costs. I guess that was just a way of ensuring that you were serious or whether. I know that the IWFL and the WFA, they charge thousands of dollars, and it's just for a 1-year license, and you may or may not get a license the next year. Does that really cause you to want to invest in the team and spend a lot of additional resources, you know, to build the team? I don't know. I think it's a detriment, the whole licensing costs and structure that has been imposed on the teams in the last decade has taken away from their ability to invest and to grow because they're being laden with these the high licensing costs. I mean, can you imagine a team that's spent, let's just say, $3,000 to $4,000, very conservatively, dollars a year? Let's say they spent that for 10 years. What could you do with that money? Think about your budgets today. And think about what you could do with that money if you didn't have to pay that licensing fee. Because really, what does the league provide? What are you getting for that? I mean, let's be honest here. By and large, you get a league website, and that can be to your advantage because they'll have a link to your website off of their website, and that may help with recruitment if someone is doing some Googling and looking for women's sports or women's football teams. They could find you through that mechanism. So the league website is a good recruitment, potentially, a good recruitment tool. It also kind of shows some girth and substance behind you for sponsorships. So if you're trying to approach somebody new and you're trying to show that you're the real deal and you're connected with some larger entity, I think that can help. Helping the sponsorship, securing sponsorship arena. So the league website is a good thing. I'm not sure how much of those thousands of dollars that we've spent in fees really attribute to the site, but it is a good thing. The other thing we get from the leagues is our schedule, and that's really it's important. We all need to have the schedule. It doesn't do us any good to recruit players and get sponsors and get the girls practiced and ready to play if we don't have games to play. So obviously schedule is imperative. But if you look at a lot of the results of the schedules over the last few years, there's been a lot of forfeits. The leagues, I don't think, have been able to effectively screen teams to either screen teams to come in that they are able to finish a season, or enable the teams to set them up for success to be able to finish seasons, because we see a lot of forfeits. And so there's really even no guarantees for these thousands of dollars that we've given the leagues that will get us a legitimate schedule and we'll be able to finish all the games that were promised. So those are really the two big things we get from the league, their website and the schedule. And we just need to decide if that's, we've gotten our money's worth from them. And I don't think we have. And I don't think most people think that we have. And a lot of times, though, I will say this, they have provided other things, like sometimes you'll see insurance is included, or balls or other things like that. But that's really just a pass-through. What they're doing there is they're collecting the money from you, hopefully that they're getting a good deal by entering into some sort of a vendor agreement with insurance or the ball provider to buy so many balls at a reduced price, and then they just sell those back to you. So that they may even mark them up. We don't know. So they do other things, but those are generally just pass-through type things. And they're not really doing anything to add value, the leagues. I haven't seen here in the last decade. They're not generating sponsorships, sponsorship dollars that actually go back to the teams. You don't see that. You don't see them entering into meaningful vendor relationships. And when I say meaningful, I mean vendor relationships where we can use our economic power and we pool those together and we get significant price reductions. We're not getting that. We're not seeing that. What we see is some vendor that's willing to give us a 10% discount. I suspect that a lot of the discount goes right back to the league, and we don't see that money at all. So they'll pool our economic power. We'll have everybody buy from a certain uniform vendor or a certain ball provider, and we really don't see much of a benefit, maybe a slight reduction in price. I think that I can get mostly I can generate, or I can usually easily negotiate some discount from any vendor around, for 10 or 15%, just to say I'm a nice guy and a nice gal and put an ad in my program. So not to diminish the effort there, but in general, they're really not delivering, the leagues in general, meaningful vendor relationships where, as a whole, we pool our economic buying power together and we get significantly reduced pricing. I'm not seeing that. If that's happening, I think that the benefit is rolling into the league as a whole, not back to the teams. Maybe they use that for championship prizes or something like that. But we don't know. We don't have a lot we don't have any visibility into the books or the finances of the league. We're kind of looking on the outside in. But that appears to be what happens there. And so they're not really meaningful sponsorships. They're not generating the type of relationships that will help us grow, by and large. The pass-through costs off the leagues, off of the fees like insurance and the trophies and balls, that's not really a service. It's not helping the teams. So I go back to my assertion that we've spent a lot of money, thousands of dollars with these leagues, and we really have not seen value add from them. We've seen some organizational things from them. We've seen a website and we get this schedule, which is important, and there is value there, but we're not seeing results from any activity where we're actually growing the sport, creating value for the teams from that league, from membership into that league. It's basically just an administrative entity that takes money and provides some services, and then you're done. So I think that during the last decade in the knots, if you will, a lot of money has been sunk into leagues with little return, and have had that money been spent by the teams to build the teams themselves and promote the teams and recruit new players and pursue new sponsorships, I think that you would have seen a much different picture of what women's football today would look like today. It's really difficult to begin your operations with a negative $30,000 balance, or to begin your operations for a year with a negative $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 or more, I guess. I think the IWFL is around $6,000 now. I know it varies a lot. Different teams get different deals, and so kind of depends on who you are and how well you're able to negotiate. But in general, we're talking about a lot of money being sucked by these leagues, and that money is better spent, I believe, by the teams themselves. They know what they need. They can see their environment. They see what opportunities they have in their own markets. And that's where the money ought to be infused in, not into some national league to evaporate into the air. And so I think that that's another example where the leagues haven't really served the sport in general over the last decade, and they've served to really stunt the growth. They've taken monies out of the hands of the teams that desperately needed it for their operations, for their growth, for the promotions. They've burdened the teams with overhead and rigor and fines that deter and distract the teams from what they really need to be doing to grow the sport. And I see that still continuing, and that's kind of bothersome for me. I think the third thing I think that they've done also is they've tried to create, and maybe they've tried to do this to substantiate or to somewhat rationalize the cost that they charge by trying professionalizing the sport. And they've used the term professional a lot. I see that a lot more lately than I did earlier. In fact, I remember getting a frantic email from the Kez and Lori show one day about not having the word professional on our websites or any of our promotion materials or anything, because at the time they were negotiating the insurance rates, and when the term professional was used, the rates changed significantly, as you can imagine, if this was a true professional league. So to back off from that and to recognize that it's not a professional league, it's amateur athletics, and to insure properly for that at the proper rate, they made us take the word professional really barred from all the websites. Now, I've seen recently where that has been creeping in again, that word professional, and I asked some of my peers about that, and they acknowledged that it's not a professional team in as much as the players are not compensated, or by and large they're not compensated for their play, but that the team is well run and it's run as a professional type organization and with a high quality. So they use that term in that respect, not in the respect of a traditional professional sports team where indeed the athletes are compensated and perhaps sometimes that's even a full-time occupation for them. So it's interesting how we use that term to our benefit, or not use it. It could be to our detriment, and I guess that's something that we have at our prerogative to use or not use as it helps us or not helps us. But I think it kind of deters from our understanding of really who we are, and if we artificially pump ourselves up to be something that we're not, then we're probably not taking the right steps to get to where we want to be. Obviously, if we're using that term a lot and we're throwing that around, then that's something we aspire to be. And by cheapening that, then we probably aren't doing ourselves justice to admit where we are, where we need to be, and put plans in place to get to that next level. So I think those are some of the things that I just wanted to share today that I've observed as far as where I thought the leagues have done a disservice to the sport, and they've caused some some teams to not be able to exist that probably should still be able to exist, and thereby it's kind of robbing players from the experience. I think the more overhead and burden and cost that you impose on the teams, you automatically cause lack of participation, or you reduce the ability for a lot of athletes to participate. And so that, I don't think, grows the sport, and I don't think that that's the intention of certainly not why I got into the sport. I definitely want – I never want finances to be a problem with the Storm, and it should never keep someone from participating. As difficult as that is, the last couple of years we've been just hell-bent on not having fees and doing our fundraising so that everybody can participate. And, you know, I never want the Storm to be just for rich girls that can afford it. I want it to be for everybody. And I think that the leagues ought to have that same mentality and do what they can do to lighten up these leagues and reduce the cost of participation, so that just gets passed on to the players, and it creates more opportunity for everyone. So kind of my thoughts around that. I think we'd be better served if we kind of look at some of those issues and see if we can't spur ourselves to somehow lighten up the leagues, lighten up some of the rigor and the overhead and the cost, and see what we can do to bring the sport to more women. I think that in general also I get a little frustrated with, I talked earlier about being something that we're not and advertising ourselves as professional when, you know, we really aren't. I think that they have not really been able to, the leagues haven't been able to minister effectively to the team's needs in the respect that there are teams out there that have been around for a while that have some very serious players. And despite that this is a hobby, they are very serious about their hobby, and they spend a lot of time year round on this hobby to get better, you know, to play better. Just like the softball players that are now, they've gotten through their seasons, they've spent a lot of time on their craft and on their sport, and they have, you know, earned berths to the national championship out there in Las Vegas. Just like those players, the football players, there are some that have spent a lot of time on this hobby, and it's very important to them. It's a big part of their lives. And by the same token, there's a lot of players that really enjoy the game, but they do want their time off after the season. They take time off. They don't want to do excessive practices during the season. They have just a different perspective, or that the hobby is still something that they enjoy and they want to pursue, but it's at a different pace or at a different intensity than other players. And that's okay. I think that we all look at hobbies differently, and depending on what other obligations we have in our lives and what else is going on, that hobby might take up a larger part of in our lives than another player's, and that's okay. And one of the things that that we need to recognize as a sport is that that exists. And I'm not sure that the leagues really have understood that or have taken steps to provide for the different players' needs and wants in this sport. I think they've set a bar of where they want it to be, and they've put a lot of rules around that and put a process around that. But to be honest, it's not how it works in reality. And I know that on my team specifically, I see it every year. I see it every year where you've got some girls that embrace it and they go hog wild over it. And they're lifting weights in the off season and on the off days, and they're at practice early and they're at practice late. And then you got the gals that you know, come on into practice, they enjoy it, they have a great time, and they go home and they go do something else. on the off times, on the off nights. And they have some, some people will argue that that's just balance, but I don't fault anybody for embracing a hobby and putting themselves, full force into that, if that's what they enjoy. There's certainly a lot to be said for this hobby over, some more destructive options that are out there for someone's free time. And so, I applaud that. But we have to. But I see that on the storm teams every year. Is there a disparity between, the coaches might call it commitment, but I just call it what they want out of the experience. You know, you put into it what you want out of it. The more you put in, the more you get out. And some girls only have, some women only have so much to put in. They're only willing to put so much in, or with their other obligations and other choices that they've made in their lives, they choose to put a certain amount in, and they're going to get a certain amount out. And sometimes that's hard to rectify and resolve within the team. And so I know it's just as difficult on a league level where they have different teams with different personalities, with different wants, and different expectations of the teams, of the players, of the leagues. And that hasn't really been addressed. You know, they've got this one-size-fits-all kind of offering, and it doesn't fit for what you see on the teams. Now, I know the IWFL has this Tier 1 and Tier 2 structure, and I think they've even started a Tier 3. I think that might be flag or sixes or something. But at least if it's the Tier 1 and the Tier 2, that's just lip service. I was involved with the meeting where that was actually introduced, and I think we've all lost sight of what they were really trying to do with that. At that time, the IWFL had been putting on national championships, and the different teams would bid on hosting them, and every team basically lost their shirt that bid on the championship team because not very many people came. Quite frankly, those are not well attended, and I still think they're not very well attended. So I think there was some acknowledgement that the national championship game was another money pit. And at the time, they were moving the league. They were going to centralize it in the Texas area. So they were going to start hosting it themselves, talking about Kez and Lori. And so any of the owners that were at that meeting where they introduced the Tier 2 stratification will remember that that had very little to do with the teams or trying to address the team's needs. What they were trying to do was create another game on that weekend and try to get the fan base for that weekend up to make more money. It was a money-making thing. They wanted to just not host for one game. They wanted two games that weekend and hopefully would drive more fans into Texas, Little Rock, I think. I can't remember exactly where their headquarters are now. But that was really the whole bit about the Tier 2 was to create a bigger championship weekend, thereby bringing in more fans and hopefully breaking it even or making some money on the deal. So that we can't lose sight of what they were trying to do there. Now, I applaud the idea of separating a league by the teams and the capabilities of the teams so that you have more even games and you have a better experience for the players. Nobody wants to play on the team that beat somebody 70-0, okay? We had this past year, had tremendous success on the field, and it was kind of melancholy sometimes in the locker room after those games. And by the same token, nobody wants to be the team that loses 70-0, right? And you're all paying the same money, and those experiences aren't good for either way. And it's not good for the blowouts, aren't good for the leagues, and so forth. So I applaud in general the concept of separating leagues by the capability of the teams to try to get better quality games, get a better experience for the players, et cetera. But that's not what the IWFL has done. The Tier 2 teams and the Tier 1 teams still square off all the time during the season. You still have the blowouts. All they actually are doing is is separating their tournament, their end of the season tournament, into two groups, and they play to the championship of their pool play. They actually go to the semifinal round, and they don't the semifinal round. They don't actually play the championship round. So the one pool is a tier one pool, and then they have the other pool, and the pool winners don't ever play. So they really can't designate a true champion. Although they do talk about being something that you're not, by whether it be calling yourself professional or whatever. You know, think about the IWFL calling themselves world champions or North American champions. That's just crazy. And I know that they've gotten a lot of flack about that. People are, they're funny. People laugh at it or they get disgusted with it. But if we can't be true to ourselves and what we really are, and we start billing ourselves as a world champion when we really haven't even, won our own league, that's just crazy. And I think it deters from the acknowledgement of where we are and what we're doing and where we need to be and putting plans in place to do that. The North American champion, I think, was the other pool that they designated. And we were laughing, one of my peer owners was laughing that the Iowa Crush went up to Canada and played a game and won. So why aren't they the North American champions? Because they actually played a game outside of the United States and, in North America and won. So maybe they should have been the national or North American champions. I don't know. Anyway, a lot of tongue-in-cheek about how the IWFL labels themselves, but it definitely, deters from the acknowledgement of where we really are and where we want to be. And I think it kind of, causes some, lack of respect maybe outside of our ranks. So I think we really need to look at that. And you know what? While I'm on this tangent, I'm not sure how I'm doing for time here. I'm sure I'll get buzzed here. But let's talk about the being what we, being something that we're not, or advertising ourselves, something that we're not. We should talk about the teams going over to Europe this last summer. We sent a team, I think it's just one team, over to Europe, and we beat up on the players and the teams there that obviously were not as experienced as we were. They are not doing this as long, they're just more novice. And yet we sent our stars over there. We sent the higher quality players over there and on team to beat up on the teams that are just getting started. What were we trying to prove there? Are we that into our own egos that we would load up an all-star team and pick a continent where they're just starting and they're just getting off the ground and just go over there and beat them up to make ourselves feel better? Did that make us feel better? The other thing I don't like about that is how much money was spent to do that, and what did we really prove? What did that really do for anything? Had we gone over and done clinics with those folks, had we gone over to do some sort of knowledge transfer and to bring them along in a cooperative manner, that would be building the sport. That would be a cooperative, good use of monies and resources to go build a sport with our brethren across the pond. But that's not what we did at all. We just loaded up some team to go over there and thump them. And I don't know how they felt about that, if they're ever going to want to subject themselves to that again or what. But I think that money could have been much better spent. That had to cost tens of thousands of dollars to send those folks over there. And why wasn't that more of an ambassadorship activity where we did a cooperative games where we mixed the teams together, or we did some information sharing, et cetera? I get frustrated also that we thought that was even necessary. I challenge you to look at a map right now of where the women's teams are in the United States, if there's one that exists. I don't know. But a picture of that in your mind of where the teams exist in the United States. there's a big hole right now in the West. Look at the Dakotas, North and South Dakota, Wyoming, Colorado. Do you think there are any football fans in Denver? Right? We've got this big hole in the United States of untapped territory there where there are women that I'm sure would love to play. I routinely get inquiries to play. I think it's because of how far west I am from the Colorado area and from the Nebraska area, although we do have some teams now on that far eastern edge of Nebraska that they want to play, but I really can't service them. I can't responsibly, come up with some way for them to participate in the storm. So we have this big block area in the United States, albeit not well populated. That's one of our more sparsely populated areas of the country, but there's nothing there for those women. So why are we spending our assets as a sport running over to beat some team up over in Europe or some set of teams over in Europe when we could be using that money to grow the sport here on our own turf? There's a tremendous opportunity there that it's gone unexploited. So a lot of frustration with that whole thing, and I'm kind of on a soapbox of the responsible use of resources for the sport and how frustrating that is. It's frustrating when the leagues put teams right on top of each other just to get back at the other league, we've seen that a lot. We've seen that with the WFA a lot. They'll try to put a team right next to somebody and, try to screw the other leagues or whatever. Why aren't we trying to grow the sport? Go into areas that don't have teams. Find new players, not putting teams in other areas and bastardizing the territory and cannibalizing the players from each other or from the other teams. Why don't we go someplace new and get new players and new sponsors and new fans and grow the sport that way, instead of just cannibalizing on what's the areas that are already there and the metropolitan areas that already have teams. It's kind of a sore subject of mine, obviously. Anyway, so those are some of the behaviors that we've seen from the leagues here in the last decade that I think have caused the sport not to grow as quick as it could have, and we're kind of laced with a lot of that history and that we're having to carry around now. So I bring these items up now because we're embarking on a new decade and the first season 2011 coming up. And rather than beat up the leagues anymore and beat up ourselves for enabling the leagues to do that to us, I think that what I want to leave you with today is that assertion that we've been through this. I think we've had a lot of learnings from the last decade, and we need to reflect on those and understand how that's affected the sport over the last 10 years. And do we want to continue along that path, or do we want to go into some other direction? And so it's a good time to kind of reflect on that. And I brought up some points here that I hope kind of spur some discussion. And we're not live tonight, by the way. So if you've been trying to get on to the chat, this is a recorded program. Unfortunately, I was not able to be here at the time slot that we've allocated. So if you have comments on what I talked about tonight, just email those to nwernis@kcstormfootball.com, and I'll open up next week's program with the feedback that I get from this program, and we'll talk about what you guys think about how the leagues have performed over the last decade and how they have helped or hurt the sport. And if there's things that we should be doing as teams and as players and owners to go in another direction, or if we like the direction that we're in, to tweak it in any way. So, again, if you've been trying to get in on the chat lines, this is not a live program, but please give me your comments. again, nwernis at caseystormfootball.com, and we will open up next week's program with those comments and maybe a discussion around those. After that, though, we will the next topic for next month or next week will be, since we kind of picked on the leagues this week, next week I want to kind of talk about the players and how the players, what the players have done in the last decade that may have thwarted the growth and the success of women's football. And I'm sure that there's a lot of ideas around those lines. So if you wanted to talk about those or give me some feedback on that topic, again, that's nwernis at caseystormfootball.com. I'll incorporate your ideas and thoughts on the topic when we discuss next week. Basically, what is it the players have done over the last decade that maybe have shot ourselves in the foot with some of our behaviors and so forth. So I think that will be an interesting one, and I hope that you guys join me. I want to also thank BJ for this opportunity, and I'll be signing off now. Again, this is Nance Wernis with the two-time champion Kansas City Storm, and WFB Talk continues. And we'll be in this time slot again next week, and we hope that you join us then. Thank you.